Fair enough, fair enough. You are listening to Punk News Podcast number 456. We're back in black, moving along. We've got no plan whatsoever this week, just like last week, but we have even less of a plan this week. Next week we'll probably have a plan, but there's no plan this week. So let's go, baby! We don't really have much of a plan this weekend, and honestly, we joke that we never have any plan, but we often have about 3 minutes of planning, and today we have 0 minutes of planning. And part of that, we'll get into that in a minute, but part of that is because I've been somewhat absent from the site as of late. And I will say, to a degree, it's heartened me that of all my vocal critics, they all have realized that I haven't been posting as much lately, and then be like, take another week off, in that they're so aware of my activities, they're aware even when I'm not posting, which means they're following me pretty closely, which I take as a compliment. Speaking of taking things as a compliment, Tom Trauma, let me compliment you, Tom Trauma, again, with the excellent reviews, the personal reviews. If you want to know how to write a review where you like and are almost living vicariously through the writer, read a Tom Trauma live review. Tom Trauma, what's happening?
Nothing, man. Thank you, John. I take that very as a big compliment from you. Also an excellent writer of reviews yourself. I don't know. I lost my train of thought. Damn it! I had something to say, John, but I lost it.
So that's about how this show is going
to
go.
You could circle back to me. I was probably thinking about Danzig or something. But anyway, you know, circle back.
Well, let me compliment Adam White.
Oh, I know what I was going to say. Okay, no. Here's what I was going to say, John. It's funny because, yeah, we obviously, this week, we had this big project rolling out that you had really nothing to do with, which is this.
I had almost nothing to do with it. And honestly, I tried to fix it, and it didn't work, but go ahead.
This is the top 100 of the aughts of 2000-2009, which I think is a fun project. I've made a couple comments that I think have been perceived as being overly negative, but that wasn't my intention. But the fact of the matter is, this thing is getting viciously attacked and it had nothing to do with you. So, John, you know, you can feel a little bit about the fact that asshole's going to asshole, whether it's you or somebody else. But the fact of the matter is...
Oh, I know that the trolls will attack, and this is true without question. Before me, it was Heisel. Before Heisel, it was... what the heck's his name? I can't remember. Well, anyways, whoever is the most visible at the site gets attacked. You know,
and it's funny because I've been kind of holding my tongue on this top 100. Now we're only I think we've only done half of them right now. I think we've gone through the top 50 or so. But PU, what is wrong with my fellow writers? Oh my goodness!
I hear you.
But it's like it. But the thing I will say about this, and I don't know how many of the hopefully a lot of you have been following this because it's a fun thing to follow. But you know, these kids are so much younger than I am, so. When the new millennia hit, you know, I was 26 years old. I was not listening to frickin' CNC Music Factory or whatever crap these kids were listening to. I was not listening to pop. I was a finely honed machine. I was listening to punk. I was listening to some thrash and metal, and that was it. You know what I mean? I was not giving a crap about pop. I suppose if we were doing like a best of the 80s list, you know, you'd have like the Thompson Twins on mine or Falco or some shit like that. Like these kids love Eminem or whatever their crap is, but yeah, it's pretty brutal.
Tom, Eminem is like 25 years old at this point,
but I'm looking at that going, these people write for a punk site. But anyway, nevertheless, it's a fun project. I hope you're following it. A few of mine made it. I've written a few. I contributed to a certain extent, but I feel like the aughts are sort of my weakest decade because I had all young kids during the aughts. So I'd follow my favorite bands, and I certainly still followed a few bands and made records and listened to records and did some stuff, but I'm not as knowledgeable. So I actually did 50. So part of the reason it sucks so bad is because I didn't contribute a full 100. So maybe next time, maybe when we do the tens through the 19s or whatever. I was pretty steadily back into the season.
Well, see, I know the number one, and I was relatively disappointed with the number one. I tried to fix it because I had Gwar's War Party as my number one, but then I saw fellow writer Jeff Sorley had Gwar's Violence had arrived as his number one. And so I switched my two Gwar votes. I switched my Violence that arrived
so that
to my War Party vote. And I was hoping that just those two votes alone would get Gwar to number one, and it wasn't even close, which that says a lot, too.
Yeah, you know what I mean? 70 or something. Well, and that's the thing. I had a few towards the very top, like my number one. I was the only one who had it, so it didn't even make the list. And I know there's going to be a little feature about that too. And listen, I appreciate the work that Greg and Jeff and yourself and everybody put into this. It's a cool project. I would have never undertaken it. What a pain in the neck. But anyway, it's a cool project.
Adam, while we're talking about cool projects, let's compliment Adam White. Let's compliment Adam White by saying he's been doing a lot of punk rock stuff and he's been keeping a punk rock well into his 30s, which is about where most punks fade away. But Adam White seems to be doubling down on his punk rock centered activities.
I mean, I'm drinking a glass of red wine on a Tuesday night, so you know, wow. I can get out of the way, folks.
The Canadian Johnny Thunders, folks.
I
drinking red wine on a Tuesday night.
I am less charitable towards the Punk News Top 100 project than most. I have a selfish read on it, and then I have sort of like a cover your ass read on it. Whereas the selfish read on it is, it's been a healthy thing for me in how much I've walked away from it. Like,
did you submit a list?
I did, but the process was like begrudging.
That's why there's so many damn propaganda albums on there.
This effort started like 30 years ago and six staffers ago.
Before the time even started, before the 2000s even started.
Before the dark times, before the empire, yeah. So at some point we started this. Someone had the not bad idea that we should maybe make this list and it would be fun. So the way that this started was, everybody submit your list of 100, your 100 favorite records of the, are we calling it the aughts? Is that the horrible name we've settled upon? Yeah.
I don't know.
There we go.
2000s works, but it's less awkward than, you know, 2000 to 2009.
So I decided to basically ignore all calls to do this and drag my feet for say close to a year before actually submitting anything. And then even then, My making of the list was far, far below my usual, at least what I consider my quality standards for putting something like this together. And it was partly because, I'm legit dad busy and I didn't have time to work on this make work project. But on the other hand, it is like summarizing a decade is like a fraught and difficult thing to do. I mean, I'll get back to that in a sec. But so I went and I eventually got my list in, and then the whole effort came down to, oh, okay, how are we going to summarize and add these up? And that's usually where I step in and become useful for the Punk News Universe, because I'm the programmer guy, so I can go like, oh, I can feed those lists into a magic box and it'll spit out an answer with math and this and that. But my help on that front was pretty anemic. And then when it came time to actually just like writing blurbs about these records, you know, I, at first as my duty, I was like, yeah, okay, I'll pick these four or five records that I will write a blurb about. And then I just like, I didn't. And Jeff came back to me like a few weeks ago, and he really took the reins on this and started getting it together. And he was like, did you want to write these blurbs? And there was a part of my brain that was like, say yes, and that means you'll just drag it out for the next 6 months and not do it. And I was just like, no, like I'm not gonna pretend that I have more time than I have, or that I'm more engaged in this project than I am. And like, please invite the other writers to come in and take whatever I've claimed and do it. And they've taken it and done it. And I've sort of just like, washed my hands of the whole thing in a very, which feels to me like a mentally healthy way. Like, I haven't even looked at one of the articles at the moment. Like, I imagine that the commenters are all riled up and mad, and I don't care. I'm like a fucking duck over here. Like, water is not sticking to me.
And that is what, like, I read the AV Club, and like, I don't even read the comment. Like at Punk News, like, all the comment, like, the comments mean so much. But like, I read the AV Club, and I am oblivious to the comments, even though there's way more comments at AV Club than Punk News. It's they're so meaningless, you know?
Yeah, and I just, part of me really likes, because I've been so mentally invested in Punk News over the years, I'm totally happy that, like, a thing can just happen. And it doesn't need me. And that's not a comment on, like, the overall quality of it, because, like, Greg and Jeff and even Brian before them, like, everyone, you know, in their own way worked their ass off on this shit. So, you know, I don't want to be like, yeah, it's a piece of crap because I didn't participate, because that's not what I'm trying to project here. It's just that, like, I'm totally happy that, like, a thing can happen and, like, the world can keep turning and I can just kind of hang out over here in my corner and I don't need to feel, like, responsible for it. And that's very nice. But on the other hand, summarizing a decade in anything is fraught. Like, it is a horrible thing to do, because here's the thing. And it is a horrible thing for anyone to do, like us or anyone else. Because the problem is, I don't think musical trends break cleanly on a decade like that. And more so, and I don't know about you guys, but like, I'm constantly finding things that are from an earlier era that should have known, right? And then when I go and I hear it, it completely makes me reevaluate whatever I thought was important from that era. Like, it just happened
to me. Adam's like, why did I spend all that time listening to all that horrible third wave ska when there was actually good records at that time?
Well, like, absolutely, right? This happens to me with it happened to me with the 80s, and it's happening to me with like the early mid 90s right now, where like I was a child in the 80s and I became a teenager in the mid 90s. So there's a lot of stuff that came about when I was a young person, but when I was too young, and then I just never hung out with a crowd that paid it any attention. But so if I was to go and give you like, oh, here's the top records of, let's say, the 90s, right? I'm going to give you the top records of the 90s. And I was to have written that like 3 weeks ago, it would have been different than the top records of the 90s list I would have given you right now.
In 2000.
No, yeah. Just like right now, like 3 weeks have passed and I have reevaluated that decade. So because just as a total example, I've been listening to a bunch of bands that are these like weird, quiet, kind of like loud, quiet, dynamic, punkish bands. They're doing all these like creepy ass whispered vocals, and they have a little bit of like a post-rock vibe to them. And I'm like, man, this shit is great. And the internet, in its collective wisdom, is like, this stuff sounds like Slint. And I'm like, I don't have a context for Slint. It's like, it's never a thing that I listen to. I recognize the name, but that's about it. And I went back like fucking week ago and listened to Slint's biggest record, and they weren't a band that had big records, but like their most critically acclaimed record, which was a record that Touch and Go released in 1991 called Spiderland. And like, it's incredible. And there's a direct line between it and all of this stuff that I'm listening to nowadays. But I didn't know about it a week ago. And I'm like, man, if I would have written my like best record of the 90s list last week and then learned about this Slint record, I would have felt like a total asshole, because like I'm a total fraud for not having this in my vocabulary before now. So any effort to go back and to like measure a decade like that, I'm like, ooh, like that's fucking dangerous. Like, it is a, you know, you can paint yourself into all kinds of corners. So yeah, it is a scary, weird thing to do. And what you like depends so much on like what age you were. Like my 2000s list, what I eventually submitted, was like hugely reflective on what I was into when I was like in university, because like half that decade I was in university, and like that was my, you know, that was an age of me branching out from a lot of the skate punk that I was into and learning that there was other stuff in the world. And my list sort of reflects that. My list reflects my, this like emotional, what's the word I'm looking for here? I had this
sexual awakening,
I had this, like this, this negative reaction to what I perceived as emo at the time. Right. So this
was terrible.
Well, right. This is the area when there's the era when, you know, when you were just coming off of the era when you had all of these, let's say, more artistically sound emo bands that are sort of like that are within the lineage of coming from the DC scene. So you had your Saddle Creeks and your Jade Trees and everything releasing all those records. And then that really quickly morphed and retarded itself into what was the, you know, the Victory Records and the Vagrant Records era when you had a lot of those, you know, Thursday Thrice, Atreyu, My Bloody Valentine bands. And like, those to me were all kids bands. And a lot of the stuff that I was listening to like as a fuck you reaction to that kind of music, which means that my whole, like the stuff that I dug from the 2000s has little to do with what is maybe critically important from the 2000s, but more about, you know, what was particularly stuck up my butt at the time. So it's a weird effort. It's a weird thing to do. I don't begrudge anyone doing it, but I just want to acknowledge that like it's a strange thing to have to do.
So do you guys think Epstein was a suicide or a murder?
There's so many things wrong with this Epstein picture, John.
I mean, he was the third best Misfits singer.
I mean, he had to be. he should have been armed guarded all the time. And the fact that he wasn't means that, I don't know. I am not a conspiracy theory guy, but. He had dirt on the highest, most powerful people in this land. All of them.
I love that Tom answered that seriously.
I'm so irritated that they let him die. It's the Illuminati. They had to get rid of him.
Speaking of letting perverts die, is there any mail?
Here's the thing. So of the hundred thing with me, Adam, my biggest problem was, like I said, I call it my lost decade, going back to the 100 thing, because Adam sparked
me. Oh, I think you were going on about Epstein.
My top 100 child sex traffickers. No, was I didn't really know where to start with it. So like I'm sitting there at Wikipedia, like looking at my favorite bands and what years their albums came out. You know what I mean? I didn't have a good way to put it together. I mean, and how do you do that? It's so massive. So yeah, I agree. It's problematic, but it's fun. And the thing I'll say about it is, it certainly has brought out the trolls, and a lot of people are being jerks, but that's not unusual. But
hey, do you guys,
it's generated a lot of conversation.
Do you think the trolls and jerks are worse lately, or do you think it's same old?
What's that?
Do you think the trolls and jerks are worse lately, or same old?
No, it's same old, but it's just the faces change. And the fact of the matter is, for me personally, at least, there's a certain level of jerk that you know well enough that you can kind of kid around with and it doesn't bother you, or you just kind of write them off. But then somebody new who you never dealt with before will just jump in and with an insult, and you don't know how to deal with it. So, and I come and go too, you know, I'll go weeks without getting in, but I like getting in, waiting in there with the crowd, but I haven't had the time, honestly. So I think it's the same, John. Same as it ever was.
So we burned my really great seg that I thought I just had there. So
what's that, your Epstein seg?
Yeah, it was pretty good. Is there any mail, John?
There is mail. You can always use that podcast at punknews.org. We love getting your mail. This is from Martin. Here's what Martin has to say. Punk News, I miss seeing one of my favorite shows this year because I had to take my brother to school. What show would you have preferred to see that you did not see? And that's from Martin. And I think he's from Sweden. Or there's abouts.
I think we've had this. I think we actually kind of answered this once before. But for me, there's been so many. It's hard to pinpoint.
For me, I'll never give myself for picking Rush over seeing the original Stooges.
Yeah.
Let me think of one that I'll say. Well, I really wish I went and saw World Inferno do their Just the Best Party lineup, which I didn't go. But I mean, like, you really can't go see them all. Like,
no, you can't.
Because I mean,
if you're an adult with a job, you're gonna miss shows. That's it.
Right, right. I mean, it's about. It's like, well, you know, you can always make some excuse not to go to a show, and when you go, and it's awesome, and you have that memory forever. But if all you did was go to awesome shows, you spend so much money, and you. I mean, going to shows is awesome, but is it productive? Does it help you out in life? To a degree, yes, it does. You know, but if that's all,
if all you do is go to great shows, I mean, it gets sort of numbing too. Because I had a period where I went to so many shows that it kind of lost its fun. And then I took a break, and now I love it again like a kid.
I'm really back and forth on it because whenever I'm being lazy about driving out of town for a show, my mantra that I repeat to myself, which is very true, is like, I've never regretted it. I have never regretted, you know, taking the shitty drive out of Niagara Falls to drive up to Hamilton or Toronto or whatever to see a show. Like, I've never walked out of a show afterwards and been like, well, man, I wish I would have sat around on the couch and watched TV or something like that. Like the thought has never occurred to me, which means that it's usually probably a good choice for me to go to one of those things.
I agree 100%, Adam, but as I've gotten older, I also noticed that I don't like rue skipping it very long either. It's I decided not to go and I didn't go. That's been
the flip side of that problem is that I've never regretted going to a show, which means if I do, I'll probably super enjoy myself. But on the other hand, I have to accept the reality that I don't live in Toronto or some big city and I can't pretend that I am. And the other part of this, and this has been the part that's been like weird for me in the past few years, especially as I've been like something doing my Canadian music shit, because the thing about like it's not that big a community up here. Like it is a small community amongst say punk and underground music fans, but it's a smaller community even amongst like people that are like music writers or part of that like commentator class of people. And there's people I know that, again, live in downtown Toronto that will go to shows 3-4 nights a week, and everything they're going to sounds amazing. And in a way, I feel like these people are my peers. Like they're treating me as a peer with the kind of content that I'm putting out and stuff like that. But like, I'm not them. Like I can't, my whole thing right now, my whole fucking theme in the past 5 years has been trying to figure out some way that I can contribute to this music community, but still be like a mid-30s dad that is attentive to his children, right? So I'm trying to navigate that. And part of navigating that is that I can't live like a 25-year-old in downtown Toronto. So like it is a constant well of emotion about that fact. And I'll see all these fucking shows coming up that look so great. And I'm like, I can't. For me, to answer the question directly, like the ones that I regret going to are these ones where I end up with like the shitty justification of like, well, like what am I going to do after? Like I'm going to be that. Like then what? So like there was a show where Fucked Up and DeLola played in an old abandoned subway station in Toronto the one night, and like I knew it was happening, but it was like, well, it's a couple hours of driving to get there, and then what, right? Like, and then it's like a Wednesday, and then I'm in Toronto at 12:30 a.m. like, what do I do? Or there was another one where Pup played a secret show in Toronto a few months ago at like a, I don't know, like a 4 p.m on a Wednesday or a Thursday or something like that, you know, in a club, and I knew about it before it was happening and I could have went, but it was like, what am I gonna do? Take off work for a couple hours early, drive up to Toronto, and then what? Like, who's feeding my kids? Then I'm just in Toronto. And just so that's my big thing, is like all these cool little events come up and I've somehow weaseled my way into being a person that knows about these cool events before they happen. But then inevitably I'm like, well, you know, I'm not going to pull that off. And constant sores of pain.
No, and you know, you said it good, Adam. You said, you know, the balancing of trying to be a, you know, mid-30s dad and you know, and still being plugged in the music scene. And that's why I only gave my top 50 2000s and not my top 100s, because that was when I was in that, you know, similar situation.
Well, like, I wonder
no, go ahead.
No, so I mean, I want to ask you this, because like, I wonder if I am buying too much into like a, I guess like a sunk cost fallacy on some of this stuff, because in a way I think about like Rich Verducci, who is one of the first hosts on this podcast and was
apparently a punk. My wife is making tea.
Yeah. Ah, it's okay.
Hey, turn that freaking teapot off.
But Rich was one of the first people that started this podcast, and he was an early punk news writer at the time. But then when he had his kid, like, immediately, he was just like, I'm out. And he was just out and is now just, like, out living his life. And I'm wondering, like, does Rich have these pangs of regret about not being able to do all the things that seem fun in the world? Or is he living, sure. Is he living a moment? Is he just, like, living in Zen?
Right? I think he's got regrets, because when he left punk news, he used to leave like all these really negative comments on punk news, which blew my mind. So that definitely implies there's something, and this is not an uncommon phenomenon. Like some writers have like gradually driven. It'd be one thing if they say, I'm out, screw you all. And they say, I hate punk news. But these are guys that kind of like faded away and kind of like to contribute less and less. And then all of a sudden they're like, on punk news, criticizing punk news, or criticizing punk news on Facebook, which always surprised me. It's like, you know, the people that write for Facebook, at least some of them are your friends. Why are you dissing on your friends? So I definitely think there's some sort of regret, or if not regret, then envy in regards to that context, at least.
Well, because like I feel that like it would have been a lot easier if, you know, when my daughter was born 6 years ago, I was just like, you know, it's been a good run, but that was a thing for a guy in his 20s. So I am out, and just like walked out the door. But what kept me from doing any of that is just this, like, just this nagging thing where you're just like, where I'm just looking and saying, I've spent so much time. Like, I've got to make something of this. I don't even know what that means. Right. But I'm like, I got to make something of this.
So I think you missed the boat on that one, but hey, whatever, Adam.
I don't know what make something of it means.
Like, what is that? How do you know when that's happened?
I don't know. Right. So, but just like, that's in my head where I'm just like, I gotta.
Well, it means something to you. You know, you've been around since the beginning.
You know, we're
all different. You know, we are like a big screwed up family, and we're all different. You know, my story's almost different than everybody else's in that I'm old. Jeff Sorley's getting pretty old too, but I mean, I'm like, but I'm saying he's the other older guy on the show, and or the other older guy at Pug News, and he does a lot. He's real active, but I just don't, you know, like, what is, I don't even have a blueprint. I don't even know what is it for me? Do I fade away at some point? Do I not fade? You know, it's like, I'm officially closer to 50 than I am to 40 at this point. It's like, what's, you know, I don't even know. I'm kind of in uncharted territory. So I'm kind of playing it by ear. You know,
Have you considered bonsconding it?
Okay. My own vomit. I'm too old to leave a beautiful corpse, John. So no, I'm not.
My cop out answer, by the way, to the writer's question is that I feel like I could have went and saw like Joe Strummer do an in-store like a fucking week before he died, and I didn't because I was an idiot.
That was my, okay. So to answer that question, the one I always give is, and this wasn't my favorite band by any stretch of the imagination, but I saw most of the grunge bands because I was a real young adult when grunge was huge. And my sister tried to get me to go see Nirvana at Wink Stadium, an hour drive on a weeknight. And I literally said, I'll see him next time. And that was early 94, and he was dead. You know, a couple months later, Kurt Cobain was dead. So that's the one that kind of, if there's one that sticks out of my mind. And like I said, I can't really let it eat at me because I just, you know, I've been an adult for a long time. I've missed a lot of shows, but I've gone to a lot of shows too. So
it's not like Nirvana's like the worst show ever to miss, though. I mean, yeah.
No, cool. But it would have been cool to see him. I'm obviously never going to see him now unless they do the Sublime thing. You know, I think I suggested it on another episode, you know, Nirvana with Bob.
Or have a hologram.
But Grohl wouldn't have to do it. So it'd just be like, the bass player and Maybe they can get like the original drummer that they kicked out.
The nameless bass player, whoever he was.
Oh, he's Novoselic, Chris Novoselic. He's known, but of the three, yeah, he's anyway.
John, what's your answer to this? You may have already answered.
He said Stoops.
I didn't, but also I like Adam. I missed the Joe Strummer final tour, and I didn't go because I thought he like did all like boring solo stuff. But for that tour, he did half Clash stuff, half good Joe Strummer solo stuff. And man, I blew it.
I was into his boring solo stuff. I just fucking, I don't know. I can't even make the excuse about being like, oh, I'm a dad, I can't go to that. It was like, no, I was some dipshit 20-something. I literally probably had nothing else to do, but I didn't want to drive. I'm sure it was that.
Dumb. We all blew up.
You had something else to do, Adam. You had 340 ounces of Mickey's Fine Malt Liquor in your fridge.
Let me give you guys a counterattack, though. I go to a fair amount of shows these days, but about 4 or 5 years ago, I was going to like 3 to 4 shows, about 3 shows a week.
I hit runs like that.
Is that a waste of time in that you could be using that time for your own art or your own projects? You know what I mean? Like, I do think going to a show once in a while or maybe once a week or whatever is inspiring and gets the creative juices going. But if all you're doing is grinding and going to shows, maybe that's – it's like if someone just went to watch TV every day, you say, well, you're kind of wasting your time just watching TV. That's all you're doing. Well, how is that much different than going to a show, you know?
I think it's because, like, if you're watching TV – you're not necessarily supporting anyone, right? When I'm thinking about going to shows, I'm thinking like less about like...
You're supporting Merv Griffin.
It's true.
I think Merv Griffin will be fine without my support. Plus, I think he's dead.
I look at it more from the standpoint of like, you know, you've definitely been like, you know, you've been in the room for these shows where like a touring punk band comes through and they got to play to like 10 people in a room and you're just like, oh man, like I feel so bad for this band. I've traveled all this way and to play for 10 people. But then I'm like, well, there are definitely times there's 10 people in that room and I could have been the 11th. And why was I not? And that's where I'm looking at it from. Like,
and you drag 4 of your friends to make the 10 and you're like, boy, if we wouldn't have showed up.
Well, just like from all like right. from a support the scene standpoint, not to be too DIY holy about it. Like I kind of get
we all know you're a pillar of the scene, Adam. You don't have to tell us how much of a pillar of the scene you are.
No, I'm really more of like a pillar of my basement at the moment.
Pillar of salt.
Well, all right, boys, listen. So I got a dilemma on Friday. So I've had Alice Cooper tickets for about 4 or 5 months now. He's doing a new show. I looked at the set list, which I never do. He's doing a lot of rare classic era Alice Cooper band tracks. But I've seen Alice Cooper once before. Meanwhile, just once, and I saw him with the Hollywood Vampires once before that, but that's kind of a different thing, you know. Meanwhile, the same night, The Lude is playing a house show, or essentially a house show, in Philadelphia. The Lude is a, not first wave, but early second wave, I think Portland or Oregon hardcore band. And
one class, like, 7-inch, can't remember the name of it.
I can't remember the name of it either, but it's good. And I like The Lude a lot. I'm a big fan. So should I go see The Lude or Alice Cooper? Now, I like Alice Cooper more overall, but he's doing new tunes, but I've seen him before. I've never seen The Lude, and I'm probably not going to see him again. But, you know, it'll be cool, but it won't be Alice Cooper cool. So that's my
quagmire. Let me say, John, this is a very difficult dilemma because my first instinct is I'd rather go see The Lude because, well, I've seen Alice Cooper several times. But the problem is, you probably paid a lot of money for those Alice Cooper tickets, and I'm a cheapskate too.
Only $20, actually.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Last time I went was like $75. Was that a nice like little theater?
That was a theater show. Now he's doing outdoor areas.
Oh, the big places. What are you sitting on the lawn?
Yeah. The honesty, Tom, like 90% of the time at outdoor, it doesn't pay to get seats. Because seats are like 30 yards closer. Well, who cares? And I'm not going to spend $200.
But usually there's like the seats are covered.
Listen, Tom, we think I'm some kind of panty waste.
You know, I guess. Wait till you're in your 40s, John. I guess in your 30s, you can have that double leg care attitude.
No, I hear you, but I happen to go see Brian Ferry last Sunday because it was $12. I'm like, I'm going to go. I'm like, how many more chances am I going to see Brian Ferry do Roxy music? And actually, it was like really, really good seats just for some bizarre reason. And he did a bunch of Roxy music. And I will say the fact that it was $12 probably made me enjoy the show a lot more than if I paid like 60 or 70.
Yeah. Kill yourself. That was the lewd 7-inch.
Oh, I thought you were just telling John your advice.
No, that was the lewd 7-inch.
I'm like, man, Tom, that was fucking cold.
I'm probably gonna go see Alice, but I don't know. The first world problems, you know what I mean? How should I go have fun?
The lewd is such a small band that there's no guarantee they ever tour again or anything like that. It's kind of surprising that they're all the way on the East Coast now, honestly. Alice is 72 years old.
Yeah. And he's still sounding good, so I don't know. The only reason the Lewd are playing is because a annual Pittsburgh Uber Punks Fest called Skull Fest brought them out, so they're doing a Philly stop too, you know. But I don't think they're coming back. But it's Alice.
How much can I get this freaking 7-inch for?
Just buy the CD compilation. It's got everything.
Yeah, that's probably true. 13.
Hey, wait, Adam, aren't you like introducing songs now on Saturday evenings or something?
Oh, yeah. So here's a weird gig that I somehow walked into. So I live in Niagara Falls, and Niagara Falls sucks a lot of the time. We have a big waterfall. It's really cool. But the it's no Victoria, when I say Niagara Falls sucks, what I mean from that is from an arts and culture standpoint, it sucks. Like we don't have a viable downtown here. We got to go to the next town over for any place where you would go see like a reasonably interesting punk band playing a bar kind of thing. It happens rarely in the falls, and if it does, it's at somewhere that I would consider pretty sketchy and not on my radar. So there's not a lot that goes on in the falls in the first place with regards to music, and especially in the tourist area. So if you were within the couple blocks of hotels and casinos and wax museums and other ephemera that runs along the Niagara River, you probably aren't going to go see a band that is not a cover band of some kind. Like, I'm sure there's a lot of live music that happens in that area, but it's mostly for like, you know, oh, we have a beer garden full of American tourists, so we're going to bring in someone that's going to go play like AC/DC covers in the corner for a few hours while people get
AC/DC. This is Canada. Why don't they play like BTO, Taking Care of Business, and
Guess Who? Our stock and trade is in Tragically Hip cover bands, because that's the only band that anyone actually covers about.
I don't believe that for a second, because no American tourist gives a crap about the Tragically Hip.
Well, that's absolutely that's true. But we are lousy in hip cover bands.
They probably play like when they know they have a Canadian crowd, they play that. But when they have the American crowd, they're like, oh, I guess we got to play some of that popular Canadian stuff, eh? You know, we'll do some Honeymoon Suite.
Honeymoon Suite's from Niagara Falls, man. So
they really?
Yeah, they are.
No kidding. They should get in barrels and go over it also.
I wouldn't disagree at all. So now,
they had a couple good songs.
Okay, so in any case, there's not a lot that goes on, especially in the tourist area down here, that would, let's just say, would be of interest from a cultural standpoint. But then last year, there is a stage, actually. The closest stage to Niagara Falls itself is there. So there's a restaurant that is directly across the street from where the brink of the Horseshoe Falls is, which is called Queen Victoria Place. And it has this semicircle of building that juts out next to it that I'm sure has some historic hydro plant purpose, but what it's for right now is it's the structure on which the giant spotlights live that they shine on Niagara Falls at night. So there's spotlights that shine onto both the Canadian and the American Falls from this like rampart that's in the hill. And they'll do things like, oh, they're going to change the color of the lights for different events and stuff like that. But that's what that structure's for. And right in front of that structure, there's a little stage. And I've always just sort of known it as being it's a stage. It's got Coca-Cola logos on it. because I guess they sponsor the fact that the stage is here. But it has never had a purpose in my universe, and I've always just assumed it is, you know, it is the place where your cover bands are going to go play for I don't even know who, because it faces this open piece of green field that is there for, like, between the restaurant and the street and the actual, like, railing where Niagara Falls is. That railing where who played Lois Lane in that Superman movie? Come on, who is Lois Lane? Tom, you're old. Margot Kidder.
Oh, you mean in the 70s?
Kidder, yeah. I was going to say, I had my microphone muted because my children are making too much noise.
Right, so at some point, Margot Kidder fell over the edge.
She
and
had
then
such a sexy voice.
Superman flew down and saved her. So basically like that railing, right? So I don't know what this stage is for, but last year they went and they announced that, like, throughout the summer, they had the Niagara Parks Commission, which is this weird quasi-governmental organization that runs the parkland on the Niagara side of the river. They had gone and they had partnered up with the Polaris Music Prize, which is that a Canadian music artistic award thing that I'm one of the jury members for, where they brought in, like, various Polaris nominated acts to play on that stage for free every Saturday night for an hour, hour and a half before the fireworks go off. And when this thing was first announced, it blew my mind because, like, that's not a thing that happens here. Like, Niagara Falls is not the kind of town where we're going to go bring in the top artistic talent in the country to play. And if it was, we'd bring them in and have them play, you know, we'd bring them in and say, have them go to the local university and play in, like, one of their auditoriums or something like that for, you know, people that are of the cultured class, right? Like, we wouldn't bring in actual good, like artistically credible artists and then have them play for tourists in front of the falls. Like, that's a crazy shit thing to happen, but they did last year. And it's all free. It's all outdoor open air concerts. And I remember I took my daughter down to a few of them. For my daughter, that's going to be her memory of, like, where she first got to see live music. Cause I can't bring a 6-year old to a bar to see a punk band. But last year there's this art punk band from Toronto called Weaves, and they were playing it. And I brought my daughter, and my daughter, like, stood there right in front of the stage, like next to the mist and the roaring falls, and jumped up and down and danced to this band playing. And then we got to go talk to them afterwards. And I'm like, you know, on the one hand, none of the tourists seemed to really give too much of a shit that this was happening, but whatever, my daughter had a great time and that's all I care about. So I'm looking at it from, like, the mandate of what we could be doing, given that this is this is one of the top tourist destinations in the world. And it's a lot of people's, like, only exposure to, say, Canada at all. So, like, it's a perfect place for us to be trying to expose what we consider, like, some of, like, the top, like, diverse talent that this country has created to people. So that's sort of the history behind this, is that last year was the first year that they did this. And, like, I went down and had a great time. And then this year, they announced that it was coming back and they announced the lineup. And I did my thing, which is, with minimal effort, expose that more on the internet. So I don't know what I did. I retweeted it or commented about it on Facebook or something like that. But then someone that, like, works in marketing at the Niagara Parks Commission got in touch with me, and they're like, "Hey, thanks for sharing that we're doing this. Call me." And I don't know about you guys, but it is very rare when, like, all of a sudden some interaction on the internet becomes call me. Like, call me is not a thing that often happens in like our, we're just going to talk to each other over chat services world. So call me was a very intriguing development. And then, so I called them and I talked to them, and they're like, yeah, they're like, our big problem is that we're bringing in all of these people that are, you know, that are legitimately considered some of, like, of the most artistically interesting music that this country's putting on, but we're not contextualizing it. So all these tourists are standing there to see Niagara Falls, and all of a sudden they have, you know, someone gets up on a stage and starts doing, like, Inuit throat singing or something like that. And they're all like, what the fuck is going on? Like, they have no, they don't know what it is. They don't know what, who's playing or why, or why they should be paying attention or anything like that. So we need someone to contextualize this. And they said, and we thought about going out and trying to find someone who's the, like the big radio station host from, you know, get the morning show guy or whatever from the city to come in and do it. But like none of the local radio people give a shit about this kind of music. They're playing fucking Honeymoon Suite and AC/DC, right? So they're like, we don't know who would be best to talk about this to the crowd before it comes on. So they're like, so do you want to do it? Because you're a local guy, you appear to be a music writer, and you're a Polaris juror, and these are all Polaris bands. And I'm like, so are you saying that I'm gonna, so this is me in conversation, I'm like, so the offer here is that on a Saturday night, I get to go get up on stage, briefly become the center of attention, but before like this international group of hundreds of people that are milling around, but nothing I'm going to do really matters because they don't even know what I'm talking about in the first place. And even if I did really screw it up, they're about to see a band that will erase all memory of whatever I was about to do. I'm like, I'm fucking down. Like, this fits, this ticks all of my boxes, right? Like, I get to briefly be in the spotlight, but not too much. I get to be like Mr. Canada and get up on stage and do that. I get to be Mr. Canada talking to a bunch of non-Canadians, which inflates my personal self-importance. And I get to announce all of these like legitimately cool musical acts and hopefully, you know, do something well by them. I'm fucking in. So I've done it twice so far. I would have done it a few more times, but I was away at all those music festivals for the past week. So yeah, so I like, you know, Saturday nights, every Saturday night between now and Labor Day, I guess I'm going to go down to Niagara Falls at 8:30, 8:45 in the evening. And I get up on stage in front of, you know, whoever happens to be, you know, touristing in the falls, and I grab a mic and I'm like, hey, I'm Adam. Here's what's going on. And I talk to them for a few minutes and then I get off stage and I feel like I've accomplished something.
That's cool. I would probably listen to like the greatest live albums of all time and just like steal the lines. Like you out there be like, right now, brothers and sisters, are you ready to kick out the jams? You know, or something like that.
Well, you see, like I've actually, like, this is a lame thing, but I've had public speaking training, so like I kind of get like a little bit of like an excitement high from doing that kind of stuff. But even like last week was weird because. So like last week I was announcing, so there's a band from, they're like an electropop synth pop duo from Montreal called Milk and Bone. And they just won like the best electronic album in Canada award at the Junos, which are our Grammy awards. So like legitimately like the top band in that genre.
In that tiny non-commercial genre,
but like as far as people that give a shit about, right? Like, I mean, one of the top ones, right? So I get on stage and both of them are super French. And their names are incredibly French to the point where like I could not, I was talking to my wife who is French and I'm like, how do I pronounce some of these names? And like I showed her them before the thing and she's like, I have no idea how you pronounce either of those. I'm like, great. So then I'm there before the show. And
what if it turned out Adam's wife isn't actually French? She's like from like Detroit or something, and like yeah. She's like lying the whole time.
So I'm standing there before the show, and I'm looking around, and this guy comes by, and he's like, "Oh, hey," he's talking to me. He's like, "So how long are you gonna talk for? Like 2-3 minutes?" And they're gonna come on. I'm like, "Yeah," and I'm like, "Hold on, I'm like, wait a minute. This guy has like a French accent." I'm like, "You're at the band, right?" And he's like, "Oh yeah," he's like their tour manager or something like that. And I'm like, "Oh shit, okay." I'm like, "How do you pronounce these names?" And I go through it with him and he kind of gives me this read on them. And his read on them totally threw me because he took like 5 of the 7 letters out of this name and tossed them. Like he silenced 5 letters in a 7-letter name. And he was like, oh, it sounds like, you know, like meh. I'm like, what? I'm like, that makes no logical. All right, sure. That's how we do. So I get on stage and I'm really trying to do these out of, like, by memory, right? Where I'm not reading anything, I'm not looking at anything, I'm just talking. So I'm up there and I get through like the part of the spiel that is the boilerplate part that I'm going to do each time. You know, I'm talking about what Polaris is and why these acts are there. And, you know, I got to thank Coca-Cola for sponsoring the music programming in Niagara Parks and all these things that I'm like required to do as part of it. Right. So then I'm up there and I start announcing the band, and I've got the band's like the relevant discography parts down pat. Right. I'm like, oh yeah, so their 2015 record was nominated for this, and they followed up with their sophomore record in 2018, which was this, and it won that award. And I'm rattling all of that off by memory because that is like, that's just like punk news reflex memory for me. But then I'm like, I'm like, I should not name the people in this band. I should just talk about what the band sounds like and then get off the stage. But I make the stupid thing where I'm like, yeah, and then the duo is comprised of. Right. And I get the first name out for the one of them. And like, I completely fucking blank on stage about like how to pronounce the person's last name. And I kind of like, I turn my head with this like, duh, look on it. Right. And she's standing next to the stage and she shouts it out to me. And then, but this is where I feel that I kind of enjoy this stuff is that, so she shouts it back to me. So then I riff on it. So then I do the same thing with the other person whose name I did have. And she did the same thing to me. And then like that became part of the announcement where it just became like, all right, I'm going to stop trying to pronounce names up here and instead announce onto stage Milk and Bone, right? And then bring them on and did that whole thing. And I'm just like, this is like, it is such a me thing to be doing this. So I don't know. That's what I'm doing. Even when I fuck it up, it's good fun. This Saturday is like a Trinidadian calypso reggae band, and I'm gonna similarly fuck the names up, I'm sure.
Ed, are you gonna wear a giant tan? Are you gonna wear a giant tam and say what a greeting rhetoric? That's what you should do, Adam.
Oh, that's the other thing. It's like they gave me some clothes, and I'm like I'm down with this. Like the Parks Commission was trying to be cool a year ago. And they're like, we don't want to make like these like normal Niagara Falls tourist clothes, because we have the same tourist shit that like everyone has. Like, you know, if you went to like Myrtle Beach, you could buy a shirt that
three for ten.
Yeah, like three for ten that says Myrtle Beach, right? So you can buy all of those kinds of things in like every gift shop in Niagara Falls. But the parks at some point decided that they wanted to try to be hip about it. So they went and they made this small run of shirts that says, in like, they're black, they're like nice fitted black t-shirts, and then in giant white letters in the middle, it says Niagara Never Stops, right? Which is like, they're riffing on all of those like civic pride shirts that you see everywhere where it's always, you know, like Baltimore, fuck you, or something like that, right? Like, you'll see those things. But they make these ones say Niagara Never Stops. And when I saw them, I was like, oh, that's kind of fun. And then I thought about it for a minute and I'm like, you know what? Niagara never does stop. Like, it keeps flowing. It's
how do you know? Do you watch it all the time?
Hmm?
You don't watch it all the time. You don't know what it does, Adam. You no, don't it, know for it, sure that it never I, stops. I, it I, might I, stop at night when you're not there.
I've seen it at night. It does not stop, right? But anyways, so I'm like, oh, that's kind of fun, and it's kind of stupid because it's a little bit of a dumb pun about it, but I kind of think it's adorable and that it's a dumb pun. So then when I went and I met with the people from the Parks Commission before I kind of got the job, they were like, oh, we're like, let us give you like some shirts and some hats and stuff you can wear. And they gave me all this Niagara Never Stop stuff. And I'm like, I will totally wear this stuff on stage. So yeah, so I show up and I'm all kitted out.
It's got like Niagara Never Stops t-shirts, Niagara Never Stops shorts, hats, the whole thing.
Yeah, I'm imagining Adam and Jenko's. He's got like Jenko's like a backwards
hat. So yeah, so I don't know.
What is up, Ben?
That's my weird gig. John, it is not quite the Summer Saray announcing thing, but it is something.
Well, listen, you got to do you, Adam. You got to do you. You know what I mean? Don't let anyone tell you how to be you.
It is very much giving me the like big fish in a small pond feeling, where I'm like, yes. I'm like, haha, like this city is kind of horrible, and there's no one better qualified to do this than me because there's no one else to do this than me.
And it's so Canadian, Adam. Everything you do is so Canadian.
I know, it's adorable. But anyways, that's my fun gig.
Don't tell us how adorable you are, Adam. We know how adorable you are. You don't need to tell us.
So if you are a Punk News Podcast listener and you happen to be in Niagara Falls on a Saturday night at some point between...
And you know who killed Jeffrey Epstein, email us.
Yeah. And you're like, look at that guy badly announcing this band. I want to give him, like, you know, $50 and a bag of weed. You could totally do that, and I would graciously accept it. Mm.
That is very magnanimous of you, Adam.
I thought so. We should play a song or something to break up this. Wow, we've been talking for 54 minutes. Holy shit.
We're back. I say let's do something we've never done before. I say let's each announce a song, and then we'll do three songs right in a row. What do you think of that?
All right.
I'll start, and then you guys can go from there. So, okay. I've mentioned the Fabulous Poodles on the Punk News Podcast before. I actually played this song about 3 years ago. We often hear about proto-punk, but rarely do we hear about proto-new wave. And the Fabulous Poodles are a UK band. I don't think they were ever that huge. I think in the UK they're a little bit bigger than they were in the USA. Cherry Red Records just did an amazing reissue. If it came out 15 years ago, it would have been a huge box set, but because no one buys CDs anymore, it's a very reasonably priced 3-CD set that includes all three of their albums, every single, and an unreleased live album as well. Yes. What's funny about the live album is it's a radio session, and it's something that you would never hear on the radio today ever. It's like the announcer, he's like, well, their gear didn't arrive with them, so they weren't able to play as well as they won. We're sorry it's so bad. And this is really not what they – like, he keeps going on and on about how bad it is. And then it's like, great. So I honestly don't think it's supposed to be a joke. I just think it's, you know, it's that section in the 70s where kind of youth and pop culture kind of was created. That is, you know, bands used to go on like Ed Sullivan and Johnny Carson and that kind of a thing, who weren't exactly youth culture. And so it's like the last line of, like, you know, a guy that's not a hip, cool young person introducing a hip, cool young band. So anyway, the Fabulous Poodles are an amazing – well, not amazing, but they're a very, very good proto-new wave band. If you like the B-52s, if you like that kind of stuff, you will love this set. And what's really cool about this set is I don't think there's a whole lot of money in the Fabulous Poodles, but just like the Bow Wow Wow set, whoever put this whole set together, you can tell deeply cared about the band and that there's tons of notes. The curation is extremely well done. It's like, here's why this song is here. Here's why this song is here. It's an excellently, excellently done set. It's like $20, so you should get it. And this is probably their biggest hit, even though I don't think it was ever really that big. This is the Fabulous Poodle doing Mr. Microphone. And then after that, either Adam or Tom are going to play a song too.
Yeah, so after the Fabulous Poodle there, we're going to play – so on last week's show, I had talked about a band that I saw play in a bar one night at Sappy Fest that was called Barnacle. So this is a punk band out of Montreal. They have like the most minimum amount of stuff out there in the world right now. Yeah, they have some live recordings. They have a demo. They have like a tape that they recorded right for that music festival that I've yet to actually check if they recorded anything on. And they play this, you know, almost underwater sounding in that it is very underwater aquatically themed for some bizarre reason. Dirty lo-fi punk rock. And it's really super fun. And it's the kind of band where if at some point they clean up their sound and get a good producer and start making real music, I will be sorely disappointed because they need to sound like shit because someone does. So Barnacle, they're great. They're from Montreal. So I got them. Tom, what do you got coming up?
So I'm going to let you guys pick. I'm going to do the John classic, the John Gentile classic. He always does this. So I was originally leaning towards one of my favorite modern thrash bands. Toxic Holocaust just released a new song today. But now I'm sort of fascinated by The Lude because John talked about how he was going to go see him.
Oh, no contest. Go ahead.
Did you know that The Lude, the guitar player on the classic Lude album, was none other than Kurt Vanderhoof, who is still the driving force behind the band Metal Church?
I actually think I did know that, because on the Melvins' first tour, they actually opened for Metal Church, and the lead singer of Metal Church is supposed to be like a really weird guy, and so the Melvins got connected with the Lewd somehow that way.
But anyway, so let's do the Lewd then, Jad. We can play Toxic Holocaust any day. Let's do the Lewd. They're from Seattle, by the way. Let's do the Lewd. Kill Yourself.
So this is Fabulous Poodles, Barnacle, and then the Lewd. And I got to say, boys, we're going to wrap it up before we play the tunes. I think we were going to talk about like our favorite albums of the year so far. We didn't get to any of that like at all. So maybe next week or week after, we'll talk about some picks to look out for, which is an article I got to run up on these too, along with 70s week.
We should keep ignoring the news.
Up and coming bands for 2019.
We'll see you next week and reach the podcast at punknews.org. And thanks for listening. And this is Fabulous Poodles, Barnacle, and the Lewd.
Can you hear my microphone singing to you, darling? As you sit all alone by your gramophone.
Turn up my microphone. If I ask you, Satisfied, kill, ain't you got no pride?